Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everyone. I've got another podcast I think you'll like. It's the George Groves Boxing Club. As a former world champion, George knows a thing or two about the ring. But there's much more to the fight game than knockouts. Join the club every Wednesday to hear from promoters, trainers, fighters, and a whole heap of boxing legends. Like this episode with Barry McGuigan. If you like rivalries, check out the episode with Carl Froch. Just search for the George Groves Boxing Club in your podcast app now.
This is a Crowd podcast.
You know when everyone wants a piece of you?
And he knocked him out, I chinned him properly.
Barry's got a phenomenal eye for talent.
He can't leapfrog that bit.
And the referee went, break!
The best boxing podcast on the planet.
1-0, Barry, easy money.
I chinned him in the second round.
Let's get on with it. I'm George, he's Deck.
Hello.
It's the George Groves Boxing Club. Good morning, Deck, how are you?
I'm not bad, George. How are you?
I'm not bad.
It's always a big question, that, isn't it? I don't know how to unpack it, but yeah, I'm fine.
How's the vocal cords?
Yeah, holding up, I think.
How's the brain? Firing all cylinders?
Good question as well. Another difficult one. Not prepared to answer that.
I'm not going to go off tangents. I've tried to come off coffee a little bit lately.
Have you?
Yeah, I mean, I was only ever really a one-a-day guy.
Very trendy.
Now like a one-every-few-days guy.
What you replaced it with?
Nothing yet, so I'm going to see if the brain still works.
Mm.
I had one this morning.
What a start.
Just in case.
Well, you're going to need it because this is a hell of an episode.
It is one hell of an episode. This might be the reason why I have decided to go into the coffee, lean into the coffee.
Mm.
Got Barry McGuigan in, who is an encyclopedia of information. I know Barry, of course. He, everyone knows Barry, but I actually personally know him, Deck. That's why he's coming and...
That's why he's here. That's why he's in the club.
The father to my former trainer, Shane McGuigan, was in the gym an awful lot during the tail end of my career when I was training with Shane. And, you know, like always, we're looking for someone to help you with some similarities on your journey. And he'd been involved in so many huge fights and a lot of similarities that I could sort of pick out and take his experience from. And looking forward to having him come in and tell us a few things about his career.
He's the latest member of the club. Speaking of members of the club, we've had some messages.
We've had a ton of messages.
We've had a heap of them. And we got to say, so grateful for all of them. Keep them coming in. Good, bad and ugly. Go on, George. Why don't you read that? We'll start positive. Go on, go first one.
Right, what, 71 Terry 27?
Go on, 71 Terry 27. Right. Legend.
He listened to the first couple of episodes. He really enjoyed them.
Bosh.
I think he undersold the really enjoyed them.
But yeah.
Loved the content and insight into the mindset and things that go on that the public don't see.
Now, that is a very good point because... That's what we're trying to do, isn't
it? That was the plan.
That's it. And you know, sometimes when we do these pods, we're like, are we even doing what we hope to do? But old 71 Terry 27, thanks for that because it's bolstered us because that's what we want to do. And actually, if there's any themes and features that people want to, outside of boxing thing, I've never known what that means, but I wish I did. Get it. Tell us about it because we'll do an episode on it.
Yeah, 100%. We will. We haven't run out of ideas.
No, it does. I know it sounds like we're asking people to do our job for us, but we are.
Yeah.
So please, anything you can think of, bring it in. We also had a message in from CPuds94. Love CPuds94. Blinding episode.
That was
about, going about the Sauerland brothers. That was a banger.
It was a banger. Mm. Yeah. They're always on the form. Unless you get both of them in. The only thing we didn't manage to do was to get them sparring. We were close.
On an audio podcast, so it's a bit of a waste, isn't it?
We just got a camera crashing in it.
Yeah.
Lots of German swearing.
I'll tell you what, George, you can read us out, but I heard that Carlos Chap has been in touch as well.
He's loving the podcast.
Big up Carlos Chap.
That's what he said. He said, loving the podcast. And sometimes that's all that needs to be said.
Yeah, loving the podcast. And if you're not loving it, I'll probably keep that to yourself, actually. Do we want to hear that? Yeah, might as well send it in if you hate it as well. _ Instaman, _N, _ and the _N. So he's singling himself out.
Is it Instaman or Instaman?
I'm saying Insta Man. I reckon he's like Herman. Oh, Instrument. Yeah, probably Instrument. Instrument, Insta Man. Can you let us know? Anyway, he said these pods are brilliant. Get Eddie Hearn on it. Would be great to listen to him talking about your relationship and dealings with him. Now, funny you should say that. Eddie Hearn, top of our hit list. Maybe not number one, but he's up there. He's in or about. He's ranked with the WBO.
I'd like to get Eddie on.
I'd love to get Eddie in. He's ducking us so far. He's busy boy, though, isn't he?
He's busy. I haven't even tried to reach out because I don't want to get left on a, you know, on a blue tick. Mm. Probably not even a blue tick, actually.
No, I'm going to have to. I think it's an in-person job, like an ambush, where he's like, yeah, no problem, mate.
Yeah. That's well, we're softening up.
I mean, probably doing impressions of him ain't going to help. But
if you can do a really good impression, we can just pretend he was here.
Yeah. I've listened to enough of him over the years, I reckon.
Well, Eddie Hearn says it sounds a bit like he's been in Swindon this week. Got a little Swindon twang.
Down the M4. Anyway, I think that's enough comment. Keep them coming in. Keep them coming in. Keep sending us ideas for music as well for the playlist, because the playlist is big now.
Yeah, it's really real exciting. People are in. Should we bring Barry in?
I think we've got to get him in.
Come, Barry. Let's
Come on,
go.
Barry.
Special guest here today, Deck, Hall of Famer.
And that's just you?
No. Trumps me by a long way. It's my good friend, Barry McGuigan. Barry, thanks for coming on the show, mate.
It's all delighted to be on with you, George.
We're trying to create a club.
Great.
We want anyone who listens has joined the club.
Great.
You're in now.
Well, I'm in, so you can't leave.
There's no subs. You haven't got to pay.
That's great.
Well, just make sure you do your running. And make sure we weigh yourself
up
every session.
Down.
Yeah, so we can ask. But I tell you what, look, why don't we start there at the very beginning, Barry?
Mm-hmm.
You made the Wattlebridge Amateur Boxing Club very, very famous. If you look back at it, if you look back now, knowing what you know, what do you think makes a good amateur boxing club?
Coaches and an enthusiastic back team. So you need a good secretary, for competition secretary. A couple of coaches, ideally, who are enthusiastic and really want to make the guys improve and are willing to travel to other clubs to get sparring. Because George will tell you, even the fundamentals is you teach basic stance, guard, footwork, but then you have to instill technique in them and courage. And courage comes from getting into sparring. That's the most difficult thing for kids. The most difficult thing to overcome for youngsters is actually that first spar. Those embryonic stages where you're getting the kids in for the first couple of spars are the most crucial if you want to get them out the other end as decent amateur boxers.
How quickly were you sparring then? You said it was important to be sparring. Were you?
Well, I'd already been sparring with my brother, but he was my only sparring partner, because when I went to the club, there was a guy called Paul Connolly, who's a guard, and he had won the Irish seniors for Wattlebridge. But he was based down in Portlaoise in the guards. And although he was from the countryside about 4 miles away, he was no longer actively involved with the club because he was now in the guards. He was representing Wattlebridge and the guards, basically. But he was based down there. But it was just after about sort of 4 or 5 months, I got no sparring. So I just left, and we went to the Smithborough Club, which had started in the 1960s and had closed after about 4 years and then had reopened again. So when I went out there, there was a whole host of guys there and I could get sparring. But, you know, reasonably quickly I was good. So to spar the men and spar the bigger guys. But that's how it started.
Mm. How quickly were you sparring, George, after you walked in the doors at the Dell?
Yeah, so I'd done kickboxing, the infamous, everyone's done kickboxing.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I was a kickboxer, weren't I, like everyone else. But I'd actually fought on the pro shows from a real early age, like 8, 9 years old. And being...
But you're pretty successful at it, right?
Yeah, I was good at it, but everyone else is in kickboxing, isn't there?
Someone's got to lose.
There's a lot of world champions there.
How many years were you kickboxing before you went to the club?
So 3 years.
Wow, three years.
3 years, I was kickboxing from 7. I did both. So I stopped when I was 13, but started boxing when I was 10. So I did both for a few years. And the old Dale Youth, which was in a morgue, converted morgue in Notting Hill. Yeah, it was a bit morbid in there. There was no room for anyone or anything, and there was definitely no room for spectators. But I'm like a kid, I'm 10 years old, do you know what I mean? And it was from Hammersmith to sort of Latimer Road, where we were, it was a fair distance. My dad sort of had to linger around. My dad would just be sort of awkwardly in the way for the first couple of weeks. And Ernie Harris, who's sadly no longer with us, he was the competition secretary, who was brilliant. Again, you know, made sure all the kids were looked after, matched properly, everything that was needed to be taken care of, he would do that. And he said to my dad one day, how you getting on? And my dad said, yeah, I'm just brought my lad down, just having a look. And he was so offended by the fact that he thought we were there to scout out the club if it was good enough. Because Ernie's like, we had 7 national champions last year. My dad told me, don't tell anyone you're doing in kickboxing. Just
keep that quiet.
Just keep that quiet, because I don't know whether he thought someone would try and take a liberty with me, or he didn't like the idea of people, because we'd see people come to the kickboxing club and say, oh, I've done this, I've done that, and you put them in, they're useless.
Yeah.
So undersell yourself. So Peter Carson, who was one of the coaches down there at the time, he used to say, I'll take the sausage mob. So anyone who was no good, he used to try and take him in the side room and take him on pads. So I was part of the sausage mob, but not for long. And you could hear me trying to bash away on these pads. So he'll be all right, Mick. Get George, or whatever they call you. They never call you by your real name for like at least 2 years, because they can't remember it.
It's like too many to remember.
Yeah. I just went in and, bash living granny out of a bunch of the newbies down there. Yeah.
What sort of age were you, Barry, at this point, that first bout?
I was 12.
Wow.
I was 12 when I mean, that's a pretty advanced age. But, I mean, the nearest sort of decent club to us, you know, big club, was Enniskillen ABC, which was run by a guy called Campbell. And Davy actually ended up being a professional fighter. His father, Davy Sr., ran the club for many years. But, you know, we went north and south, even in the midst of all the trouble. So, and it was treacherous stuff travelling through, you know, along the border, and you'd come round the corner and the army would be out with these little red lights, and you'd have maybe a couple of OUC men with them, and you come round the corner at 60, 70 miles an hour. You know, you weren't supposed to be doing that, but that's the way we drove. And we come round the corner, my old man, and slamming on the brakes, and it was scary, scary stuff. You kind of became accustomed to it, and if you had a pair of sort of boxing gloves hanging on the rear view mirror, they let you go through. I mean, once they knew you were involved in boxing, there was like almost like a special dispensation. Don McRae wrote that book a couple of years ago about it, and it was, you know, boxing had almost you had like a dispensation. You could go through to different places, and I remember I used to spar Davy Larmer, and he was a young pro. Well, he wasn't a young pro, but he left it quite, but he's a bantamweight. When he won the gold medal in 74 in Christchurch in the Commonwealth Games, and good fighter. Well, I remember him trying to beat the living daylights out of me. I was only like 17, but he could, like, he really go for it. So there was nothing held back. And so I remember we went to the Shankill Road, and it was a, you know, deeply Protestant area. But, you know, when you did the gloves on and they knew who you were, what you were doing, I'm going down to spar Davy, that's fine. That was like, it was almost like you had that free pass.
Because you won the All-Irish Championships, yeah?
Yep.
So would North and South actually box each other?
No. That was the one sport, apart from rugby, it's the only other sport that has a 32-county team. Mm. I won this Ulster Seniors in 1978. I remember knocking out Shawnee Russell, Hugh Russell's brother Sean, and everybody was like flabbergasted, never thought I could do it. And I chinned him in the second round, and had this mop of raven hair, and he used to go boom, and it was like mad power happy, you know, trying to flatten everybody. But I nailed him and stopped him, and so I was a choice for the Commonwealth Games team. And we went to Edmonton, Canada. Talk about going to the Smith Bramature Boxing Club from the Wattle Bridge Club. They had a competition secretary who got you fights. But then, of course, I was winning and flattening kids, and I could bang even when I was a child. And so you turn up at a fight and nobody wanted to fight you. Yeah. So we wouldn't go until we were guaranteed a fight. Yeah, so that started really in the mid-70s. I won my first national title in 1977. I won the best boxer of the tournament. It was in Limerick. And then I was 16 when I won the Ulster Seniors. So when the Commonwealth Games team came along, I was picked. And that's really the start of it all. I then went to and won the Irish Seniors. I only won one national senior title, believe it or not, because I broke my hand in 1979. I was out representing Ireland in Romania, won the gold medal, in a multinational tournament, but I broke my hand. And then the seniors were coming up, so I missed them and I couldn't win them. So the next year I knew it was Moscow 1980, the Olympic year. So I won the Irish seniors then and won the under 21s. And the guy that beat me in the Irish juniors was a guy called Mick Holmes. He beat me and they were all taught to fight and punch in combinations like pros instead of the big sort of jabbing and stealing points like the amateurs did. So he beat me in the Irish juniors. I was furious and I'm going to get you back. So in the Irish under 21s, we boxed in Drogheda and I knocked him out. I chinned him properly. And I was delighted and determined to do it again in the Irish seniors, but I couldn't get him out in the Irish seniors. But that was Moscow year. And then I went to the European juniors and I won two fights. And then I fought a guy, I knocked out a Czechoslovakian guy. No, he was from Yugoslavia, and I stopped the Italian, and then in the semi-finals I fought a guy called Yuri Gladyshev, who won the World Junior Championships in December 79, and the Irish wouldn't send the team out there, and I fought him, and I beat the living daylights out of him, and they gave it to him, and I was so furious. He was tricky and awkward, but I battered him, and then I went home. And of course, I was picked for the Olympic Games. So then I had to just, you know, get myself back, you know, back at it.
But you speak there and you were travelling all over Ireland, obviously representing Ireland as well. And, you know, George had it with London and, you know, Joe Calzaghe in Wales and Josh Warrington in Leeds. That feeling of belonging, that feeling of representation, how important was that to you? And how did that feel at that time in your life?
No, it was hugely important. And it's interesting because I'll move on from there because I won the Commonwealth Games gold medal. And I remember coming home to after winning the gold and I was lucky in the final. I fought a guy, a Papua New Guinea guy called Tumat Sagolik. What a name. And I'll tell you what, he could punch, my God. There were only two times I was ever, like, didn't know where I was in the fights were against him and against Juan Laporte just before I fought for the world title. And this guy could, he was built, I'll never forget, you know the way they used to send out, like, the bantamweights and the lightweights?
Yeah.
And then they'd send out the flyweights and the featherweights. So there was two weight divisions, right? So I'm walking to the ring and look across and said, that must be the lightweight. I get into the ring and I go, let me because he was built like, I swear to God almighty, he had arms on him like my legs and he dropped me, but I'd never been hit like in my life. Christ almighty, it was a tremendous punch. Yes, so that was the Commonwealth Games. Yeah. So I fought for Northern Ireland in the Commonwealth Games because, as I mentioned, my father's family were all from County Tyrone. My mum's family were from Rosslea, which is just over the border from Clonus in County Fermanagh. But I remember coming back to Monaghan and they had a big reception in Monaghan. There wasn't that many people. There was probably 150 people. You know, I'd represented Northern Ireland, right? And it's in the middle of the Troubles and it's 78, which is, you know, it started in the late 60s. So they were escalating all the time. And I heard the rumblings of a few guys at the back, sort of, no, I'm not sure I want to be here supporting that. And they just walked into this crowd and thought, what's going on, you know? So you could feel it at that stage that there was, you know, there was, Clonus was a Republican town, like big Republican town. And Monaghan was as well. So Monaghan town was, the county town, you know, Monaghan itself. So you could feel the tension. And so then when I fought and I took out British citizenship to fight for the British title, you know, there would have been the hardened Republicans who would not have liked it. The majority of people, 95% of the population liked me and loved the fact that, you know, I could fight, I was aggressive and I was entertaining. But there would have been the hard-bitten loyalists and the hard-bitten Republicans that would not have been friends of mine. So it was a very tense and treacherous time. And then, of course, when Barney Eastwood, and he was probably the instigator of it, and I went along with it, we boxed with, you know, the United Nations flag of peace. My shorts were made out of that, in the blue dove of peace with the dove on my shorts. And we said, we're not going to get involved in all this politics. And, you know, and my dad sang Danny Boy, which was very important to us. Danny Boy was everybody owned Danny Boy. It wasn't just a Protestant or a Catholic song. And as I say, the music and sport were normally the things that you didn't touch. I remember, for example, when I beat Sean Russell in the Ulster Seniors, a couple of weeks later, East Germany were doing a tour of, now this was East Germany, this is before the wall came down, right? So these guys were all on steroids and were all trained and were from a knee high to a grasshopper taken off. Their families, if they showed talent, were brought into the cities and they were trained and brought to school. And so it was a proper professional regime. So these guys were all really superly talented. And I got to fight, and again, I remember the name of the guy, and it was in the Shankill Road, right? The Shankill Road Social Club, which was the Protestant side of town. And Jerry Story, because he was so heavily involved in keeping harmony amongst the different religions, he, because it was his team, they were sacrosanct. They were, nobody would ever touch him. And so, and I remember going into this club and it was like, just heaving, absolutely heaving. And you will remember, but even in your time, like the, some of these nightclubs, there'd be no air conditioning, was like roasting warm, people smoking their brains out, and you're in there trying to fight. And after like 2 seconds, your mouth was arid and dry. And but anyway, so we were in this place, and apparently was told later that there was a mile of a section cordoned off around this that nobody could come into. But I remember fighting this guy, this East German guy, who'd just beaten the national champion down in Dublin at bantamweight. And he was 6 foot tall and he was 54 kilograms.
Nice.
And he wasn't skinny, George. He was slender, of course, but he had wide shoulders, and his name was Torsten Koch. And he was beautiful boxing, great, great skill. Gussie Farrell was the Irish bantamweight champion, and he was in my sights for the national title. And he boxed the ears off Gussie Farrell and wobbled him and gave him a couple of counts. And I thought, right, now I'm going to have a go at this guy. And Jerry Story wanted me to prove that I could beat him. So I beat this guy. The crowd went apoplectic. And I just ran after him the whole way around the ring and nonstop on him. And I won. Winning that was really important. But more importantly, it was in the middle of all the worst trouble. And we were in deep into East Belfast, you know, up in the Protestant side of town, where, you know, all these people, working class people were, and they were exactly like the Catholics. They were all very tense because of the trouble, and it was just such an amazing atmosphere. I remember my dad got up with the band and he sang a couple of songs, because dad was a professional singer, and it went, it just brought the house down. So we had a particularly good night that night.
Your dad sounds like a fantastic man.
Yeah, he was great fun.
Do you know the quote that comes, do you know the Rocky quote, when Adrian says to Rocky, how comes you become a fighter? And he says, because I can't sing or dance. Like, is that what he said to you, Barry? No. I know you can sing and dance.
I actually can sing. Yeah. I know that sounds very bumptious, but I can hold a tune. Not like him, but I can hold a tune.
I read a story about him. He had a particularly famous support act in Malta.
Yeah. Yeah. David Bowie was after the Eurovision Song Contest in '68. He was out in Malta, and he was the big act, right? and David Bowie was on the undercard.
On the undercard.
So yeah, that's a fact. But he was, you know, as I say, well travelled, and he used to go to New York to what the band with the various bands that he was in, they would go to do a 6 week stint in the Bronx in a big Irish club which had two or three floors on it, and it was called Dirty Nellies. And he used to, his usual thing every day, he'd pop down to Gleason's to watch all the fighters training. He got friendly with the lawyer Rudy Greco. That was it. Rudy Greco was the...
That's a good lawyer name.
That's a proper lawyer name.
And Rudy was the lawyer, and he was a really generous guy. And he said, Dad came down, he befriended Dad, and Dad said, I've got a young kid who's doing well. I think I had just sort of turned pro at that stage. So he went out there every year right through the 80s, and he'd do a 6 week stint. So it was quite a long stint. And it was obviously profitable for him and the band and all of that. But every day he would go down and watch the guys training. And Rudy said to him, you know, you must come up to the Catskills with me. I want to show you this kid. He's called Michael Gerald Tyson. And he said, yeah. And he came home and said, Barry, this kid is like phenomenal. He's, he was joking, but he said, remortgage your house and put all the money on this guy winning the title. But, you know, I'm joking, but that's how excited he was about him. But so he turned out to be great. But I, you know, and I've got pictures of him, and there's a picture of Tyson, a little Polaroid picture, and my dad standing beside Tyson, and he was like, he was only a kid himself, but like really muscular. And he'd after working out with Cuss, and I don't think Kevin Rooney had come in at that stage, but Rooney came in afterwards. I think Teddy Atlas was still involved.
How hard is that at that time, Barry? You mentioned Mike Tyson, he obviously had to deal with it a lot, but you know, when everyone wants a piece of you, how do you manage that?
Well, the interesting thing was I was always very approachable and very kind to people, and always give them time and always spend time with people. And my poor brother, God rest him, he said to me, Barry, stop this, mate. You can't, you know, spend 5 minutes talking to everybody, because otherwise your days will be gone. So there's no doubt about it that I enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking and communicating with people. And of course, you like, when you see people light up, it makes you feel good about yourself, you know. And it was as much for me as it was for them, but I always give people time.
Does that resonate with you, George? You know, that feeling when you're knocking about in West London and people want to chat to you and talk to you all the time?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Because you've got to make a decision, haven't you? Am I going to give everyone my time, or am I going to just try and shut it off and not do any of it?
I mean, but Barry's much more skillful. I am at conversations.
No, absolutely not.
You know, sometimes people want to talk to you about boxing all the time, and you realise I've forgotten to develop any conversational skills. You know, and I go, well, what do you do for a living, metal and plumber? All right. I've got no follow-up question for that. You know, but I really want to talk about you, because I don't want to talk about boxing today. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unrivaled, really, your popularity at the time. The fact that the open tour bus after you win the belt at Loftus Road, both in the north and in the south, is phenomenal. The fact that you box for a world title in London as well just shows you.
Well, Pedroza wouldn't come. Mm. Pedroza wouldn't come to Belfast because he'd watched the ABC had covered me from 84, and the first fight I had on American TV, coast to coast, was against a guy called Paul Divorce, and he was a little chunky guy, just carved out of marble, really tough kid from New York, and I beat him up and stopped him in the sixth round, but he was strong and heavy handed, but I boxed him, but moved around and stayed in the centre of the ring, and then just attacked him and put it on him, because most people stood off him, so I put it on him, and he couldn't handle the pace, and I just went at him and non-stop, and the jab was great that night, slapping it into his head, and American TV were there, and Boza Edwards was on the undercard, and he fought another. He just lost the world super featherweight title. I remember sparring with him up in Barney's gym. He was with us for the last sort of couple of weeks, and in Castle Street. And I remember thinking, "Wow, he's big for the weight." And I think that hurt him, because he was really a lightweight, but he boiled down to super feather. It hurt him to try and get back to that weight, because again, you weighed in the morning, you fought in the afternoon. You know what I'm saying? You didn't have time to put on 15, 16 pounds that people do nowadays, and sometimes more, George.
Never more, but yeah, I get your point.
You know what I mean? I'm only joking, being facetious, but you know, the modern day guys are, you know, and what you do is you train for that. You train for that weight. So you if you're walking around at, you know, for example, I used to walk around at 147, 146, and which is 10 stone 6, 10 stone 7, but I fought at 9 stone. And I always trained, so I never allowed myself to blow up to enormous weights. But I would go to 145, 150 sometimes. So that's big, especially when you're fighting on the day. But what I'd do is, in that 8 weeks of preparation, I would grind it down and hold it, grind it down to the next little bit. In other words, drop my weight a little bit more, hold it again. And so that you were getting stronger at that weight.
Barry, can I ask? I think it'd be fascinating for not just fighters who are competing now, but people who listen at home and maybe trying to get themselves in shape. Can you talk us a little bit about the training you was doing back when you was fighting, and maybe even some stuff that you think is different to what you've seen Shane doing with his fighters now in the gym? Obviously, you was preparing for 15 rounds as well, which for me is like, I mean, it takes your breath away when you're actually fighting and you're 3 rounds in, you're like, for me, in my brain, I'll be like, oh, I'm just starting.
Exactly. Well, you know, the interesting thing, if it's, and you've been in some hellish fights, George, so you know, if you're blowing out your arse you're four rounds into a fight and you, from halfway through the first round, you've been busting your nuts and you're fighting at a real heavy pace. Unless you've done, and I know because I saw you, you know, hundreds of rounds of sparring, intense sparring at intense pace, you're going to be flagging. I've sparred very similar to you. We got in so many South American guys. We got in this guy called Jose Marmaleo, who fought Antonio Espargoza for the world featherweight title, looked very like Pedroza, similar style. We got a guy called Ezequiel Mosquite, who was a lightweight, from Panamanian lightweight champion. We got in Carmelo Negron, little small chunky guy from New York. Gerald Hayes, who had fought Pedroza and gone sort of nine rounds with him. I think he was stopped in the ninth round. Obviously, haven't had the experience, and he was great sparring too. Then we had David Irvine, who was a welterweight. We had a guy called Pepe Moore, who was a light welterweight. We had Davy McCauley used to spar him. What we'd do with Davy, because Davy was a feather or a flyweight, they'd throw Davy in at the end. But you know, I didn't hold back. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying one time in boxing news, you know, McQuiggan's a bastard. Because my attitude, and I remember being on the Irish team, we'd be training and I would put in an extra couple of rounds on the pads and say, I'd implore Jerry Story to do an extra few rounds. Okay, he said. And I hit the bag and I'd do the skipping. And in the sprints, I was always trying to beat everybody in the sprints, and we'd do 2 mile or 2.5 mile as fast as we could run. I was always up at the front, pushing. And the guys used to say to me, like, what are you doing?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And I said, because I'm doing it because, you know, if I get four fights into an international competition, I'm going to need that extra bit. I used to bomb along, and so we never ran with the sparring partner, never. Down in Clonus, it would be longer runs, and I'd have either my brother-in-law Ross on the bike with me, or I'd have somebody else running with me. I used to have a guy called John Doherty, who was a cop, who was a Garda in the south of Ireland. He ran with me. He was a good runner. Yeah, and then I'd train again in the evening. So I was always training, and so that when I get to camp, that really was when I started thinking about, you know, sparring, and we do loads of pads at home, and then I'd be sharp as a razor when I get to camp, then I'd start sparring, and then we'd go right through. You know, I don't think I ever done a camp longer than 8 weeks, and it was just about weight management after that, and then taking it down slowly. I think I'd done 2 15-round spars. One was before the Pedroza fight. I remember then doing 15 rounds one other time for the fight against Bernard Taylor, which was who's mandatory defence. He was Pedroza's mandatory defence. The WBA let him have a voluntary against me, and then on the basis that if I won, I would pick up the mandatory against him. It was in the King's Hall, and Taylor was called the BT Express, and he was like brilliantly talented, like so good. He'd beat the Cuban Adolfo Horto, who fought Rudy Fink in the final, but boxed the ears of him and beat him a number of times. So he was a world-class talent who didn't turn up in Moscow. So he had turned over and everybody was raving about him. Beautiful skills and love to move, and quick as lightning, like Sugar Ray Leonard style. Have a look at him if you get a chance. Really was great to watch. But I knew that I just put him under pressure and just never leave him alone. And that's exactly what happened. I fought him in my first defence, and I'd done a 15 rounder again, but this time it was in the gym, and my weight was good. It was the end of September. I'd fought in June and beat Pedroza. I had to pick this up, reasonably quickly. So it was September in the King's Hall. It was still reasonably hot. The place was absolutely banging. And walking to the ring, he was intimidated, no question about it. And the noise was deafening. And I never left him alone. As soon as that bell went, I just went on you. I was looking, interestingly enough, last night at the you know, you look up BoxRec and you see your record and you can go back and look at the points. I was three rounds ahead on two of the cards and two rounds ahead on the other one. But I just walked him down and he just, I could feel him breathing. And I knew, and I was nailing him to the body, and I hit him a few times. The referee warned me, and I lifted it up a bit higher. And I used to throw the left hook up the middle, and deliberately lifted so they would put their elbow in. Yep. And then I go, bump. The first one was light. The second one, I'd just stick it in their short ribs with that long left hook round the side. And then I could listen. And I showed them and go, oh. and when I knew that every time, knew that I'd hurt them, then I'd be just on them, you know.
That was the first offence, right?
That was the first offence.
You must have felt at that point you were at the peak of your powers, like the fame, well, also you're in the ring, you must have just felt invincible at that point.
Well, I never felt invincible. It was hard work. I was always a realist. I was always aware of my frailties, and you're only as good as your latest opponent. You know what I'm saying? So you have to continue to train and put the effort in and everything else. So I was never cocky. I was always very humble and always aware of what was around the corner, as it were. And so the next defence then, I was supposed to fight a guy from Argentina, and he pulled out twice. Fernando Sosa was his name. That was my second defence, and it was in Dublin. And we decided, because of all the politics, we'd fought in the north. Second defence was going to be in Dublin. It was at the end of February 1986. I'll never forget it. I was in the hotel at Dublin near the rugby ground, and Wales was playing Ireland in the afternoon, and then they went to Lansdowne or went to the RDS to watch me in the evening. But I never got a wink sleep the night before because there's so much people walking up and down. And anyway, I stopped him in the 13th round. He was a tough kid. I hit him with everything. He could just, like rubber, he could take so many shots. But I got him out of there in the 13th. I had him down in the 8th, gone completely, and the referee made a complete hems of it. I ran over down him, bam, 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 and his legs were going, and their corner jumped up on the side of the ring, and the referee sort of left the action and ran over to the corner and gave off to this guy, and I sort of stopped and held back.
Nice.
You do. But anyway, it was great fun. And he was a tough kid, and he went 12 rounds with, or 11 rounds with Azuma Nelson too, so he could fight this kid and could take a good shot.
That's the worst, when you think a fight is over as well, and you think, I've won this, and then it's not over yet.
You're
finishing a run, and then you're like, another lap, really?
Exactly.
Same happened with the Chudinov fight, didn't it? I remember you sort of gesturing to the referee, like.
Yeah, I mean, not quite as bad, because it was near enough over edge. straight away. But then there's a couple of fights where
it went on as Steve Gray, and I went, Stop it!
Steve, whenever you're ready, mate.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean that was a beatdown. I mean, it was such great excitement in Bramley Lane that night.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
That fight, that second defence, was early '86. But George, we've got it written down here. What else happened in 1985 that's notable for Barry, as well as winning the world title?
Right, this is to show in the level of fame. Level of fame. Yeah. Tiger Woods level of
Tiger
fame.
Tiger Woods level, yeah.
Barry McGuigan.
Yeah.
The release of your own computer game.
Yeah.
In 1985, it was Barry McGuigan's World Championship.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It was Barry McGuigan's Boxing World or whatever it was. Mm. I don't remember it that long ago, but I remember it, at the time it was big stuff, and it was people loved it. They said it was a great game.
It is a great game. Yeah. I watched on YouTube. I wish I could have played it. Barry McGuigan World Championship Boxing. You can do like a career mode, I assume, where you go through and you're fighting these different fighters, and then you could stipulate how much training you wanted to do to develop yourself in particular areas.
All right,
we've got light bag.
Yes.
Heavy bag.
I'll take light, please. Yeah.
Roadwork, weights, and sparring time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's pretty intricate then.
Even then, it was pretty good. You know, weights is interesting. That the strength and conditioning thing has become that, you know, since I've talked about this with George before, but that's a new thing. I did bench press at squat, but there was nothing more than that. And what we do, press ups, chin ups, dips. That was it. And you chin this way, you chin that way, and you dip and you do wide press-ups, wide, you know, have your stance or your hands wide apart or narrow, shoulder width apart. And that was it. And then you'd crunch and you'd do lunges and maybe hold a couple of dumbbells. But that was the sort of height of strength and conditioning training.
As well now is people have totally disregarded the stuff that worked for generation after generation, stuff that Barry's describing now. And like, you speak to a strength and conditioning coach, you're like, do some press ups, and they pull a funny look at you as if say, what's the point in that? We can do some, you know, med ball throws or this with your heart rate monitor on. And it gets a little bit too clever and a little bit too complicated when really
it's a fairly simple business, isn't it?
You can't leapfrog that bit.
Yeah, you need that too. And that's what happens when you join as an amateur kid. You know, they don't have they won't have the facilities. You're not all going to get an individual strength program. They're going to line you all up and you can do press-ups, sit-ups, skipping, squats, weighted, you know, non-weighted squats, bodyweight squats, stuff like that. Just the fundamentals.
Yeah.
Do you clash heads at all with Shane about this? Because he's very cutting-edge, new school.
No, he's new. He's done strength and conditioning. That's what he started off doing, and then I got him to hold the pads for one of the fighters, and then it all started, you know. But he's big on S&C, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, only to an extent. It's not going to make you know, it's no point in having muscles the size of the room here if you can't fight. You either fight or you can't fight.
So fighting Steve Cruz in Vegas, which, you know, at the time of day you're boxing, it's going to be 110 degree heat. And you know that before the fight starts anyway. Mm-hmm. Did you do anything different in that camp and that condition?
Well, I went to Palm Springs, which is about an hour and a half south of Vegas, and we trained out there, and we trained in a tent at the back of the hotel, which is on the golf club, and it was like bacon. But yeah, again, I don't think I could ever have won in Vegas outside, because it was 110 degrees ringside, but you're forgetting that the arc lights of the television made it another 120 degrees.
Of course.
So Tommy Hearns was on before that against Mark Medal, but he flattened him. But I don't know that I could. You know, if you think about this, I could never have fought to my capacity in that heat.
15 rounds that was, and obviously that was what you did.
Yeah.
Do you feel, I mean, George is boxing over 12, I already said that, sort of the idea of doing 15 is crazy, but
if you do it in the gym, you can do it in the ring. And I knew that I was still lots to go when I'd done 10 rounds of sparring, and so we hike it to 12, and then we do, and we'd only, and I'm sure, you know, we've done it with you, George, that you only have to do it once or twice in preparation for a fight. And it's more a psychological thing than anything else, but it also helps in weight reduction. If you're sparring 10, 12, 15 rounds, it's, but once you've done it, and I wrote it down here. I think I had 5 planned 15 round fights. So, and I went the distance only twice. One winning the title and one's losing it. But it's in your mind, so much of this stuff. And the fight game is so much about your psychology. And, you know, it's about your preparation. Preparation is absolutely essential. So if you're banging the pads and hitting it really hard, and, you know, Shane could tell from George 10 rounds into a pad session, he's really whacking now and he's done 10 rounds. So you know that he's not going to have any trouble doing 12 rounds. And to an extent, it's only an extension of that from doing 15. And I had a very high level of fitness, slow heart rate, 44 heart rate. I remember getting ready for the Commonwealth Games, and I was a kid. And we were in the Holy Family Club, and after doing a collective training session, I can't remember the name of the doctor, but anyway, he came in and took all of our heart rates.
Pronounced you dead, Barry.
and he went like, and we were after doing it, we've done a session, it's about an hour and a half after the session, and he's just doing the medical first. So he took my heart rate and it was a big, strong pulse, slow. So it's 44 heart rate. So I had a good, strong heart, and I was built for stamina. Yeah, put it that
engine.
Way. Good engine. So that definitely helped me, and I was physically strong. And you know, I could bench press 150 pounds when I was 14 years old. I was really physically strong. I could do, you know, 80 press ups and 60 dips. Still doing them at 61
Seen
years
it.
Old.
It's so, impressive.
So you know, so I was physically strong, and that was my asset. I wasn't as good a boxer as the majority of the guys that were on the Irish team. They were probably skillfully marginally better than me, but I had great strength, and I had drive, just like George. I mean, he would go through a brick wall because he knew he had to. And it's like, it's so much of it is about your mentality. And, you know, taking shots, learning how to take a shot, getting hit to the body, which I'll never forget in Romania. And this, remember I mentioned this amateur tournament, and this southpaw guy, and he was probably 10 years older than me, but he was a seasoned amateur, and he was a Romanian senior champion. And it was a semi-finals of this multi-nations tournament. And we were up close. And the referee, you always have a, I don't know about you, but you're always aware of the side of your eye, the referee's always there. He's either right or left, but he's always there and you're always conscious of him. And we were sort of mid-range and the referee went, break! And I sort of looked at him, right? And this guy buried his, he was a southpaw, buried this backhand right up into my stomach. And I went, it was the panic, and I took a knee, and thank God it was the third round, right? And the referee, I was absolutely banjaxed. It was proper left, right up the middle, and I was way ahead. So I'd boxed the ears off him, and I'd hit him some good shots and whatever. He took a count in the first round. Jesus, he hit me this shot up the middle, and anyway, so I went down. I took every second of the count. I got back up, and the referee says, okay, and I ran like a rabbit around the ring. He chased after me, and I grabbed and held him, and the referee warned me and told me off. But I got to the end of the round. God almighty, I never could hit like it in my life. It was terrible.
What do you reckon, George? 15 rounds?
Sometimes when they're like, when it's just a little bit more physical and a little bit more grueling, then, I mean, there's been fights where I've been miles ahead in points, but I remember when I boxed Christopher Brass after losing to Froch, and then after like round two going, oh, I'm counting down these rounds now. Yeah. And if it was 15 rounds, yeah, and like, I've got 13 rounds to go now, yeah, I'd be like, you know, you're going to get there, but it's like, oh, it's going to be a long night's, yeah, work.
I remember saying after you saying that, George, I remember saying after the 13th round, Paddy Byrne was a cuts man in our corner. He was a great old, just a great old wise, a head on his shoulders. He was originally from Dunleary in Dublin, spent most of his life in Brighton, and was a cuts man in the corner. And funny, lovely guy. He used to work with Mogens Palle in Denmark and over in Europe. Brilliant guy. And we always had him in the corner as well. So I remember he saying, what round is this? And he goes, it's the 13th. I said, the 13th round? And he says, yeah. He says, you have two rounds to beat one of the best featherweight champions in a long time. I'm serious. He says, anyway, so you know, my adrenaline was up so much, I didn't know where I was in the fight, but I knew I was doing well. So I wasn't tired. I was on a high, but a lot of it again is in your head. If I had been, had the crap beat out of me for three or four rounds, I maybe wouldn't have felt so good. I'd have been counting the rounds, but I didn't actually know what round it was. It was two rounds to go.
Yeah, you end up being a bit of a control. Well, I was like, sometimes you want to be a bit of a control freak. So like, you sit down, and you don't want to ask, how was that round? Because you think the TV mic might pick it up and it sounds like this fight's close.
Well, that's the sort of thing. We were never aware of that, because that's not a relatively modern thing. But think, you know, I won the title 35 years ago. So in the corner, they did pick up stuff and they did mic the corners, but it not, you know, it's an essential part of it now. So you go, so let's go to the, you know, such and such a guy's corner and hear what they have to say. That's a new and intriguing part of boxing, because guys like you who are doing the analysis in the studio or whatever, they want to hear what they say and say whether I don't necessarily agree with that, or I think that's a great bit of advice he's given them or whatever. So that's become a part of it as well. And sometimes you hear guys in the corner and you think, what in undercut is he talking about? You know, he's just that. It's absolutely dense. But, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, I remember, like, we went into the Rocky music in 1984 for ABC in America, and they couldn't believe it. They thought, wow, this is great. We were coming into, you know, dan dan da da dan da da da. Yeah. Well, the original one, not the, I think that's which was a big orchestra one. We came into that, and it was like, it was huge, and it was a new idea. We often think we actually invented coming to the ring, you know, to music, but it certainly was something new way back in the sort of mid 1980s.
You know? Okay, we'll take a breather there, and then Barry, what we want to do is ask you a bit about your life on the other side of the ropes.
If I asked you to help me promote this show, Barry, how would you go about it? Should we do a role play here?
Yeah, go on.
Right.
What do you reckon, Barry? What's the selling point of this show today?
Full disclosure, Barry, it says on the script, ask Barry to say something nice about the show. So that was George's setup there.
Oh, I mean...
Don't stutter, Barry. Straight to it.
No, I'm not stuttering. I'm just... let me just say that I said I would come in and do it with you, George, because...
Oh, no.
because, first of all, you're bright, you're intelligent, you'd ask me sensible questions, you know your stuff inside out, you know... You don't exaggerate. That's the important thing. And, you know, Dec's excellent journalist, and again, I read his stuff, and you cut to the chase. So... there's no problem having banter, but there's so much bullshit in so many of these podcasts that you just take it all with a pinch of salt. What I think I'm getting from you, and I know I'm getting from you, is honesty. And, you know, at the end of the day, there are great stories. You don't have to, you know, go over the top and exaggerate them out of all proportion. Just tell us as much of the truth as you can. You know, everybody in their lives, and you know, it's a tough business. It's a working class sport. We meet phenomenal characters, and you know, it seems to be the sport that has the most crazy people in it. You know, there's enough stories to write 10 books about. So, you know, just keep it, you know, that sounds like a real cliche, keep it real. But just, I think what you can do, what you can bring to the podcast is just honesty. And, you know, if you've been there, done it, bought the t-shirt and still have the faculties to be able to articulate your thoughts and tell your stories, then, you know, it can't be anything but a success.
Then start a podcast.
Start a podcast.
That's what I'm saying.
Best boxing podcast on the planet.
That's
of all time. I think that we could say that as an official quote. What level, you say there's most podcasts full of bullshit?
I don't mean that.
Can you just give us a percentage of what you reckon our bullshit-o-meter is at the moment?
You're bullshit-o-meter. Yeah. Well, no, I just sincerely hope we're not bullshitting at all here. So it's 100% at the minute, so there's no bullshit. And you know, I can have a laugh with everybody else, but I listen to, you know, some of the stuff and I think, God, that, you know, that's an exaggerated story. There's another one. But I'm just saying, it seems to be fairly prevalent. So just you must sign a waiver when you go in there. You tell the truth.
The truth will always, what's that saying?
The truth will set you free.
Yeah. The truth will set you free. You're boxing through and through, I think. Fantastic commentator and analyst, which we don't see enough of these days. I love it. We're listening to you on ITV, Sky, and many others. You help with management. You're involved with Shane in the gym. Is that how you're getting your boxing fix now, would you
say?
Yes,
that's exactly how I get my boxing fix. You know, I watch the Irish amateurs and I tune in sometimes and watch the Irish ABA championships down in the National Stadium in Dublin. And when Shane says, because that's cut it out, would you stop? So I can't get enough. No, I enjoy it. I come into the gym 2-3 times a week. You know, I like to see the kids just develop and get better and be there when they've had a hard day and just say, that's it. You know, you can't have every day a good day. They're all doing very well. The gym's full of talented kids and it's very exciting times.
Barry's got a phenomenal eye for talent. You know, sometimes when it's been overlooked, You look at the success they had with Carl Frampton, Josh Taylor, and now even in the gym, and I'm not saying you've spotted them, Barry, maybe not, but yeah. Azeem Brothers seem to be doing really well. It's a gift, yeah? And what would you say you'd look for in a fighter then? Would you see that maybe might have been overlooked elsewhere? Is it... It can't always be skill and achievement.
No, I'm a power guy. I like guys to have power because, you know, you're born with power. And you know as well as I do, you can never make somebody a puncher who's not a puncher. You can improve their power. You can get them to be a little bit more courageous, to sit down on the shots, just another nanosecond more that makes the power greater, and implore them not to be frightened and move out of the way all the time. You see kids and you can look at them and think they're not going to be a top amateur, but I know they can be a top pro if they get the right coach. I remember sparring with Sylvester Mitty and Ray Cattouse and Jim Watt way back in the 70s. I remember coming over as this 15-year-old to live with my Uncle Leo in Highgate, and I used to take the tube system down to Mile End and get a taxi from Mile End across to Canning Town, to the Royal Oak, where Magri was training and Jimmy Flint was the British featherweight champion and Ray Cattouse and Jim Watt was the world lightweight champion. And I remember doing 8 rounds with Jim Watt, and I was 15 years old. And then it was conditioned sparring. And, you know, no matter what they say, it wasn't flat out. But I remember the first day I came and Terry Lawless was there, and I jumped in to spar Charlie Magri. And he was the European lightweight, a flyweight champion. And I was only a bantamweight. And he was probably half a stone heavier than me. So ding, the bell goes, and I didn't know the score. So I just went, okay, this guy's going to come out. So I went bang, bang with a right hand. And his nose started to bleed. Terry Law says, stop, come here. I said, me? Yeah, come here. He says, we're not fucking doing that here, mate. And I said, sorry. He says, we're not sparring like that here. I said, okay, fine. He says, just you go light, you throw your shots light, you don't try and take his head off. I said, fine. But I'd already broken his nose, and he was fighting an Italian in the first defence.
Oh, yeah. No. So I've seen Charlie Magri's nose. Yeah. So that was you, Barry.
Well, no, it wasn't. I had nothing to do with that, but he stayed in the game too long. But no, Charlie was a lovely guy, very, very talented fighter. But, you know, it was that gym, they had sparred, there was conditions on the sparring. Mm. And as I said, I sparred 6 to 8 rounds with Ray Cattouse. Then I sparred with Sylvester Mitty, who was a light welterweight. And, you know, and I understand it, but they didn't let everything go. So it, you know as well as I do, there. I don't know how many conditioning spars you had. It didn't seem, in my memory, there weren't very many. it was all flat out. And you know, you see a lot of the stuff in the Ingle gym where it's all body sparring, and that's bullshit as far as I'm concerned. Mm. Absolute total nonsense. Because the reality is, first of all, you've got to learn how to slip a punch. You've got to see that nanosecond between a shot hitting you or missing you. You've got to learn how to slip it so your head's in the right position, so you don't miss the target when you come back. Those shots are whistling over your head, missing you by a fraction. You've got to get used to that. And even though you're wearing a head guard, and sometimes, you know, I don't think I ever wore a full face guard, but it's important to learn how to temper and take a shot. And you learn that in the gym. You learn how to absorb a shot. You learn how to move your head and rotate, and you can hit it with 75% of the power and then roll your head after you've taken it and come back out and come back with a left hook or a right hand. All of those little finer details that take into consideration split-second timing. You get that in sparring, and open sparring, not condition sparring.
I used to like to try and... I was sparred for real. I was got real sparring partners in. Tried to pay them well. And
spar big guys.
So you had like, yeah, bigger guys to take the whack. So you wanted like good light heavyweights plus,
exactly,
really.
Yeah. It's the same with me.
A smaller guy in to keep you quick. But again, you maybe like you said earlier, Barry, you put the lighter guy in at the end of the spar to just keep you sharp. So if you're doing a 12 rounds today, the lighter guy would come in with 3, maximum 4 rounds to go. When you get tired, you punch looser anyway, so sometimes you carry more power in the later rounds. But you want that guy to be nice and sharp, keep you sharp.
If I can do 8 rounds or 6 rounds or 8 rounds with a light welterweight, I know I can do it with a featherweight. That's what you're always, you know, you're thinking that, you know, I want a bigger, stronger, physically impressive you know, a sparring partner, so that when I can do 6-8 rounds with him at a full tong and he jumps out and then we throw a featherweight in and they feel, wow, I can just bounce him all around the ring. So I used to spar all of my camps with light welterweights, always. And because I just couldn't get a featherweight. The Mexicans would come in and Barney would take their passport off them. So they couldn't go home.
Does it ask? Do you treat the sparring partners nicely? No, keep them happy? Or no, do you keep them miserable and try and get more out of them?
No. Well, the Panamanians, we used to...
You wouldn't feed them, would you?
No. They used to stay in the guest house with me down in Bangor on the front. We used to stay in a guest house with a girl called Mrs. Gray, and she had old people staying residents full time with them, and the two houses, big old Georgian and Victorian houses together, and we used to stay there, and there was lots of rooms for myself and my sparring partners. I'll never forget one morning coming in, and it was the first day, two Mexican guys that were sparring with me, little small guys, and it was November. Oh, wow. And I came in and I knocked the door and I opened the door and they were lying in their coats.
I thought you said they were cuddling.
They were lying in their coats. They were so cold. They had actually these big hoodies on them. So anyway, so I said,
welcome to Ireland.
Are you going to run? And they ran, but then it was the first day again. So I ran on and said, come on. They said, no, we run. We pissed this. So they were trotting. And so I just left them and went on. But yeah, it's
rapido, though. What was your Spanish like?
Exactly. It's slightly better now.
Yeah.
And then one boxer, I guess you could say you worked with since you retired, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. Well, he was great. He was just a fabulous guy. He was around 160 pounds, about 11 stone 6, and he was sparring extensively with the British welterweight champion who was from Reading and whose name defeats me at the moment. He'll come back to me.
Senior Byfield?
No, not him. No, this was many, many years ago. Okay. So we were getting ready in 97 for it. Mm. And again...
So the film was The Boxer?
It was a movie, The Boxer, with Jim Sheridan.
Yeah, yeah.
Jim wrote my book in 1985 and we're still great friends, and so we talk to each other all the time. He said to me, Barry, I want you to train Daniel Day-Lewis. And I said, what? He said, I want you to train him. I said, what for? The movie was inspired by me because he spent his time with me, but he couldn't, because of the issues I had with Barney Eastwood, legal issues, couldn't tell the real story. Mm. I told him about the Young Ali fight, and it was in the World Sporting Club. It was in the Park Lane Hotel. That's it.
Yep.
And it was where there used to be an ice skating arena underneath it. That's where we have all the shows. That's where the Queen apparently learned how to ice skate.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
That's a bit of history for you. And I fought Young Ali.
You didn't teach her how to ice skate.
No, I didn't. But I fought Young Ali in that arena, in that little room, the Great Room, which is where they have all the shows, and they have the, you know, lovely balcony, and you look down on the floor. And so I told him about the Young Ali fight, and I knocked him out in the fifth or sixth round. And he went into a coma and he never recovered, and they flew him home to Nigeria and they turned the machines off after 5 months. So he wanted to tell the story about, but turn it around. And the boxer's about this guy, IRA guy, he's in jail and he gets out and he's fed up with the guys that are have been warping his brain his whole life, and he breaks away from them and he gets away from them into in boxing. And the story's about where he fights this guy and he's beating him up, and he's and this guy's useless, or not useless, but he's about to get knocked out, and the crowd are going, you know, go on, and he's going, what are you doing? And he said to the referee, why aren't you stopping this fight? And he walks away. So he turns the story around. So I trained Dan for that. We done 2.5 years of preparation for it. Wow. And he sparred. Jeff McCreish was the guy I was looking, the name I was looking for. He was a British welterweight, British and European welterweight champion at the time. Right. And, you know, Jeff took it easy on him to begin with. But he was sparring flat out, like 6-8 rounds with McCreish. And you know, he was very good.
That's amazing. Very good.
Acting, yeah. And, I mean, but he is the epitome of, you know, method. And he's really good. And we're still great friends. He came to, he's been so good since Nika passed. And he's been in touch with me all the time. So he's a brilliant friend, and he's you know, he's lovely. He lives over south of Dublin, and then he lives in New York as well, so he's back and forth. But he says he's not going to act anymore, so
that's
disappointing.
Terrible.
But it was a great show, and we done very well, and it got very well rated in the various different films, so you know, the festival. So I was happy with the it all came to a sad end, because it was the first time that Nika, my daughter Nika, got leukemia, and I had to leave the set. We were out in the studios just south of Dublin, and I got the news, so I had to go straight to the hospital in East London. So it was, and he of course was in touch with me all the time. He's a really great fellow, very, very kind guy, very private guy. And and he's married to Rebecca Miller, who's Arthur Miller's daughter, and she's a beautiful girl as well. So, lovely, lovely people.
Should we do the feature, Barry? Then we'll let you go.
It's feature time.
Go. Feature time.
What's that,
Barry? You're the clone of Cyclones. Weather-related quiz.
Cue that jingle.
Game of Clones.
Which December 2019 World Heavyweight Title rematch came dangerously close to being postponed due to hugely surprising rainfall all evening?
Are we talking about Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz Jr.?
1-0, Barry, easy money. Very good.
That's okay,
George, your first question. Which AC/DC song became synonymous with Arturo Gatti? Barry, you could come in and try and nick another point.
No, I don't think I can.
Oh, fuck it, I don't know, go for it.
Thunderstruck. Thunderstruck.
I don't really like it.
There'll be people at home shouting.
I wasn't an AC/DC fan anyway, so.
Okay, this one, Barry, it's for 2-0.
Right.
To pull into the lead, really into the lead. Which boxer known as Black Mamba faced Costa Zou, Julio Cesar Chavez and Pernell Whitaker during his 72-fight career?
Sol Mambi?
No, it's weather-related, but that's good. That's a great shout, because Sol is sun in Spanish.
Oh no, I know the guy. I can picture him in my head. I could be here.
Give up.
Forever. Yeah.
Roger Mayweather.
Wow.
Still one.
Roger Mayweather.
I know. Costa Zou, Julio Cesar Chavez, and Pernell Whitaker. Okay. Which Bosnian German boxer who won world titles at two weights between 2003 and 2016 was really called Adnan Katic?
Oh yeah, Felix Sturm.
Sturm.
Yeah, who beat Oscar De La Hoya and didn't get it.
Yes, so Felix Sturm, Sturm meaning storm in German. Yeah. So very well done. George is back.
Multilingual in here.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, here's one for you, Barry. In April 2010, Karl Froch defended his WBC super middleweight title overseas, but his flights were badly disrupted. Why?
And what weight?
2010, Froch, WBC super middleweight title overseas. Listeners, I hope you're with me here. 2010.
Hold on, let me think. I'm getting mixed up here. Two generations, so I've got to be careful.
Go on, George.
Kessler, yeah.
But what was it that disrupted his flight so badly that he nearly could never fight him?
The weather was so bad that the planes couldn't, because the engines were afraid of... Ah!
Arrive at the point, Barry.
No,
I've got it.
I've got it. It's the Mount Vesuvius or whatever. is that it?
Yeah, but what?
It was an eruption of I can't think of the name.
It's ding, ding. That's the volcanic ash cloud. I reckon we'll give you that, Barry.
Yeah.
I won't give you...
Too late.
Okay, that's 1-0. Okay, George. Oh, this is an easy one.
Yeah.
In September 1974, at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York, What did Muhammad Ali famously claim to have handcuffed and thrown in jail?
Lightning. Thunder.
Thunder and lightning, that's right.
Done. He's pulled in, so Barry, he handcuffed lightning, thrown thunder in jail. Okay, this one, Barry, to draw level and ain't got a fucking tiebreaker. Your son's fighter, Lawrence Okolie, successfully defended his WBO cruiserweight title at the O2 Arena on a Sunday night. But what was the name of the storm that put the fight in jeopardy after ripping off a section of the roof?
Oh, God. How could I possibly remember that?
The name of the storm is tough, Dan.
Yeah, but when you get it, you'll be like, it was everywhere. And I bet it was really everywhere for you that week.
Right.
Any ideas, George?
Is it Almina?
Nope. So I'll give you a clue, because you know we know storms.
What letter?
E.
E.
Oh, no, it is then.
Go on.
Eleanor.
No, but it was a female name beginning with E.
Well, it always is. It's always a female name.
Storm what?
Emma? Ellen?
Elaine?
Eve.
You're never going to get it. Shall I give it to you?
Yeah.
Storm Eunice.
Oh, that's Eunice. That's not E. Is it you? Yeah, it's you, isn't it?
Of course it is.
It's
1-2. So, George, you can... We've got two more. We've got two more. So, George, if you get this right, then you've won.
All right.
Which light welterweight boxer describes Hurricane Katrina as the best thing that ever happened to me? And then, just for a little bit of extra spice in this, he then lived through Hurricane Harvey. So he lived through two.
Lived through Hurricane Harvey.
Yep.
Oh,
and
right.
Barry's ready to draw this 2-1.
You have it, Barry.
It's Regis Progress.
Yes, Regis Progress.
And he moved to
Houston,
Texas, yep. And he was in Mississippi or New Orleans.
Yeah, and he says that because of the hurricane, he had to leave, and that was when he started boxing. And he went to the new gym and he trained alongside Evander Holyfield. Amazing story, Regis Progray.
He then tried Los Angeles, too expensive. He's back in
Texas. So that's 2-2. Yeah. Okay, so Barry, easy one for you. You could
these
win
are
this.
Weird fact. They're very, very, you've put a lot of effort.
I'll tell you what, you tried writing 10 boxing questions that have got weather related. It's not easy. Okay, why did David Hay wear running shoes for his fight with Derek Chisora?
Because it was a storm and he was slipping all over the place.
Where was the fight?
Derek Chisora. That was in a football ground. What was it again?
West Ham.
Yeah.
Okay, so Barry, that's 3-2.
For who?
To you. here we go then.
He didn't want to win.
To make it 3-3, George, about which fight was Don King talking when he said, after the fight, the rains came. It was like God speaking to us. Under the stadium was
Rumbling
the
Jungle, wasn't it?
1974. Very good. 3-3. Okay, tiebreaker. First person to get this wins.
Great. Okay.
What famously fell from the sky during Evander Holyfield versus Riddick Bowe?
Was this parachutist?
Yes. The fan
stuck,
man.
Stuck on the... he knew that.
Barry's done it.
He knew that.
I was trying to figure out it was weather related.
Well,
but
precipitation of some
exactly.
sort. Well, Barry wins 4-3.
Congratulations.
Let me win.
That was very good. That was a great performance from out of nowhere. I mean, the questions...
I'm disappointed with Saul Manby.
Yeah.
Very disappointed.
Roger Mayweather.
What a career.
Costa Zoo, unbelievable. Okay, mate, 4-3, Barry, and what a way to leave it.
Game of Clones. Barry, thanks a lot for coming in, mate.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed it.
I'm sorry I was so long-winded about some of these stories, but
you wasn't. You're being long-winded about the sorry. There's nothing long-winded about it, Barry. Yeah. He was a fantastic
Thank
guest.
You
loved
much.
It. Thank you.
You're welcome. Delighted to be here.
Did you enjoy that, Dec?
George, I'm exhausted. What a journey that was.
Yeah, what a journey. He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. British Hall of Famer, you know, a household name for generations. What a great insight into his boxing career and many other political troubles that he had and everything else. It was just brilliant to have him on.
That is the George Groves clout there. You got Barry McGuigan in because he's proper club member, isn't he?
Yeah, he is proper club member.
Got him all the way here, all the way to Soho.
15 rounds, Deck. I wanted to talk more. He didn't want to tell me more. I wanted to talk more. 15 rounds. He played it down. It's not. It can't be easy.
Mm.
If you want more from the GGBC team, then go follow us at GG Boxing Club on Instagram and Twitter.
And you can also reach us via our new brand spanking new email address as well. Email ggboxingclub@crowdnetwork.co.uk.
And speaking of reaching out, as we've created this club, we want to hear from the elite club members.
Give them a voice. you can't start keep running this as an autocratic system. No, sorry, I won't have it. The people need a voice.
Shall we? We'll add a tag, yeah?
Yeah, go on.
Ask the Saint. Ask the Saint. It's not religious, right? On the socials, right? You can ask me anything, godly or not, about career or anything. You know, fighters past and present, face-offs, walkouts, beyond, you know, anything. I'm all ears, right? Mm-hmm. And don't forget to keep sending in those requests to be on our official club playlist, The Ring Walk.
And if you want more boxing in podcast form...
Who wouldn't?
Go and check out the Opening Bell, the boxing news podcast. Everyone's second favourite double act, Matt Christie and Alex Steedman, after us.
I mean, everyone loves them.
Everyone loves the boxing news. Everyone loves the boxing news. Go and listen to their podcast. Search for the boxing news, Opening Bell, in your podcast app now.
Now.
Next week, George.
Frank Smith. He's coming to talk about...
Money. What? Yeah. This is one we've had, people have been hounding us about.
I think so. Everyone wants to know about money. And who knows more about money? The guy who's been at Matchroom since he was a wee nipper.
Yeah.
Tell us everything we need to know.
See you next week.